Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service of public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally, 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the age of AIDS. When we come back. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor, and we're taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that? What if a plumber said, he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client? Or what if a carpenter said, he who fixes his own steps has a fool for a client? Now, doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or a carpenter who couldn't fix his own pipes or steps is incompetent? Well, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who can't represent himself in court has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or carpenter. Now listen to James Nielsen. Nielsen is a professor, a law professor, at the Hastings Law School. Here's what he said. He said it's a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed, and it's worse than that. Most students graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. And a student can graduate without having set foot in a courtroom, without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel. And a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for those students and for their clients, it is a cruel hoax. Now, that's Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. That number again, 417-273-4967. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Do it right now before you forget. That number again, 417-273-4967, or go to the webpage, georgegordon.org. All right, we've been talking about this thing of the age of AIDS put out by WGBH Boston. It's on PBS's website. For your information, www.pbs.org. That gets you onto the webpage. That's the PBS webpage. And then go to the WGBH/pages/frontline for the 48-page report. Let's just skip ahead now to 1991. You know, Magic Johnson announced in 1991 that he had been infected by AIDS. Now, let's look at Magic Johnson, 1991. This is 2006. That's 15 years. Magic Johnson has been treating his AIDS holistically through his immune system for 15 years without AZT and without drugs and chemicals and so on. And when he tried to get on the air, when he tried to say, look, now let me tell you what I'm doing, he has been stonewalled. Nobody is going to give him the time of day. And that's been my experience. My experience has been that if you've got a drug, a chemical, if you've got some kind of a treatment, if you're in the treatment business, you're in the pharmaceutical business, you can get hurt. If you're talking about the Bible or holistic or divine healing or something like that, you're not going to get the time of day. Now, in the last program, I mentioned divine healing just because it's a viable alternative. It's probably been used, in the Bible, I'm going to say 10, maybe 15 times out of the last 3,000 years, 10 or 15 times, you see this thing of divine healing. Very, very rare. You see religious people having hands laid on them, and you'll see, I got to tell you a story here. I remember a guy, a hell of a nice guy. He had cancer, and he was a typical Christian criminal. He was a nice guy. You know, everybody liked him. And he didn't eat pork. He didn't eat shellfish. He kept the Sabbath. He practiced a lot of the law, but he didn't practice all of the health laws. He practiced some of them, but he didn't practice all of them. Like most Christians, you know, he practiced some of the law, but he didn't practice all of it. And so he went to the elders of the church, or his church, and they laid hands on him, and they anointed him with oil, and they did all of these things that the religious people do. And then he went on to die. And I tucked that away in my heart. And I said, well, for this guy, it didn't work. Divine healing didn't work.
Now, that's not to say that it doesn't work, can't work, has never worked, or that God is just totally indifferent and is not going to save you. I don't think that Magic Johnson is relying upon divine healing. Now, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know that much about it. You know, he might have went to God and said, "Hey, listen, I'm a sinner, I'm a bad guy, and I deserve to die, but I want to change my ways." I suspect that what Magic Johnson has done is gone to a medical alternative called alternative therapy. Now, that's got some real merit, too. And it's scriptural, and it's certainly got some merit. And so I thought I would mention this: that basketball player Magic Johnson discloses at a press conference that he has contracted HIV, and "I will now become a spokesman for the HIV virus because I want people, young people, to realize they can practice safe sex," he says. And you know, sometimes you're a little naive about it, and you think it could never happen to you. You only thought it could happen to, you know, other people, and so on and on. And it has happened. When Magic Johnson made the announcement he was HIV positive, it had a major impact in our community, and it had a major impact with young people who are now 25, recalls activist Pernessa Steele, or Seal, S-E-E-L-E. As a matter of fact, I was just speaking with someone in the store just last week, and this is a brother who's working, and he was behind the counter, and he's now 25 years old, and he was saying, "I remember, I think I was 15 when Magic Johnson announced, and I've used a condom ever since. It was so impactful for him and his generation." All right, so this guy's going to continue on with his promiscuous sexual lifestyle, this kid. But because Magic Johnson, his basketball hero, got AIDS, he said, "Well, I'm going to use a condom." I think that he missed the point here. Now, it's certainly safer to use a condom. No, I don't deny that, but that doesn't make it legal or lawful. It's still illegal. Adultery and sodomy are still illegal, and it's still an unsafe sexual practice, but it's safer. I remember I had a guy here one time. He said, "Now listen, Gordon, let's assume that I follow this program over here. I go to Flo's Whorehouse about once a week. Now, do I have to quit cold turkey, or could I taper off a little bit, you know, like maybe once every couple of weeks or once a month, you know, for a year or two?" And okay, the guy's got a good point there. I'm sure that once a month is better than once a week. But you know, it's like, you know, you could come up to me and say, "Well, look, I'm a murderer. I work for Murder Incorporated, and I usually kill about one guy a week. Now, do I have to give up my livelihood and quit killing people cold turkey, or can I just taper off a little bit until I find another line of work and maybe just kill one guy a month, you know, to tide me over so that I can pay the electric bill and pay the rent?" Well, you know, we can only kill you once, you know, for murder. God can only kill you once. You know, so I guess, you know, once a month is better, but, you know, I can't tell you that, yeah, you could go out there and break the law and taper off slowly but surely. The law says don't kill people. It doesn't say just kill fewer people. The law says don't practice adultery. It doesn't say practice adultery in moderation. It says none, zero, zip, zilch, nada. And that's the way that game's got to be played. So I guess it's a step in the right direction, and, you know, more power to you, but it'll do you a lot more good, I think, if you quit altogether. So there's the Magic Johnson story. Magic Johnson's still alive, treating it holistically, and that's what I'm advocating here. I think he'll do better if you'd concentrate on a holistic approach rather than with chemicals and drugs. I mentioned to you in the last program, a lady wrote me a letter, I guess a couple of young girls. I don't know how young they are. They call themselves the girls, and their mother's on chemotherapy. Well, once you start this chemotherapy, then it either works or it doesn't, and evidently in this case it isn't working. I told you about the neighbor lady over here. The chemotherapy isn't working, and so she's in all probability going to die from it. If you take the alternative approach coming right out of the chute, then what you're doing here is building your immune system. And your immune system will either work and protect you or it won't. When your immune system finally gets old, you know, when you're old like I am, your immune system doesn't work as well as it used to. And ultimately, I'm going to die. I'm going to die from this immune deficiency at some point in time. I hope it's when I'm 110, but at some point in time. Meanwhile, I drink raw milk. Now, if you're drinking pasteurized milk, Coca-Cola, Mountain Dew, Jimmy Dean, pure pork sausage, and then, you know, you light up a Camel when you get through with lunch, your immune system can probably handle that when you're young, but the older you get, the poorer your immune system works. And so then an opportunistic disease like cancer comes in, pneumonia or something else, and then you're faced with death. And so the solution then, holistically, is to stop the poison and to start with bodybuilding. And I can't think of a better solution than juice, that is raw juice, like juicing carrots, juicing celery, apples. Now, I have to tell you a little story here. My sister-in-law came down with cancer, and my wife, who has been on alternative therapy, you know, for 28 years, told her sister that if you want to live, then you're going to have to change your whole dietary lifestyle. And her sister could not do that. She couldn't handle it. the idea that she was going to do Gerson's coffee enemas and that she was going to do Walker's juice therapy just bogged her down. She could not cope with. She couldn't comprehend it. So I want to tell you, coming out of the chute, ladies and gentlemen, that if you want to live, you've got to make a radical change. The way you've been living for the last 30 or 40 years is an ingrained lifestyle. And that's the way you want to continue living. You do not want to give up your diet. But your diet is what gave you this disease to start with, and you're going to have to change it if you want to live. It's just that simple. So the medical doctor comes along and says, you don't have to change your diet. You can continue to chew snuff. You can continue to drink Jack Daniels. You can continue to eat fat and anything you want. Here's the magic drugs that's going to save you. And here's the price. That's what people want to hear, and that's what people buy. So I'm not surprised that there's a great commercial success with the AIDS pandemic. There's a great commercial success with cancer. But if you want to live, that's not the way to do it. Magic Johnson hit the, he's just one of those rare guys that picked up on the holistic approach and said, okay. Now, there are some guys that have taken up on this chemical approach also, and they've survived, but the percentages are very low. I said maybe 100 on chemicals for an extended period of time. There are literally, and I've got numerous reports in here of people with AIDS that are managing the AIDS holistically and have been like Johnson for 15 years. Now, those are pretty common. I say common, not compared to the millions of people that have AIDS, but it's pretty common among people that practice holistic lifestyle. Pretty common. So if you've got AIDS, I don't see a problem with you living with AIDS holistically and your immune system suppressing it. And you go on to live your life, and maybe you'll die at age 85 or 90. But if you go on these chemicals or if you go on chemotherapy, I think that's going to kill you. Now, there was a global disaster predicted in 1991, a classified U.S. intelligence report. The global AIDS disaster predicts with uncanny accuracy how AIDS threatens the world, with chapter headings titled A Time Bomb for the 90s. AIDS is now global. AIDS in Africa getting worse in a grim future. The report predicts 45 million global infections by the year 2000. Well, we're in the year 2006, and you've had 70 million so far. 25 million more since 2000. So just about on track. Now, of the 70 million people who have been infected by AIDS, 30 million have died. And the other 40 million are going to die over the next 6 to 8 years. Now, the infection rate for AIDS is going up exponentially. So if you take a look into the future 10 more years, and if AIDS is doubling every year, then you've got 40 million people with AIDS today, then you could expect 80 million, then 160 million, and then 320 million, and so on. Now, the AIDS epidemic is not doubling every year. It was doubling every year, but now it's doubling every 2 or 3 years. And so as you look at the curve on the graph, it's going up in the early days at a very rapid incline, and then it starts to tip over and moderate. It's still going up, and it's still doubling, but it's not doubling every year. And indeed, it couldn't, because if it did, it would infect everybody on Earth in very short order. If you went from 40 million to 80 million to 160, 320, in the next 15 years, it would envelop everybody on the planet. That's not going to happen. It's not going to happen for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's never been done in the past, and so we could look at the past as the guide to the future, and Bible prophecy tells you it ain't going to happen, because Revelation 6 says only a fourth of the people are going to die from disease. There's war and other ways to kill people, but about one-fourth, about 1.5 billion people are going to die from these diseases, and AIDS is one of them. Now, bubonic plague killed 100 million people in the Middle Ages. I don't know what the total world population was in the Middle Ages, probably a billion or less, killed 100 million. It could have killed as much as 10% of the world's population. So 10% of the world's population is 600 million people, 600 million round numbers. And there's little doubt but what this AIDS thing is going to kill 10% of the world's population. So you are on the cusp. You are witnessing. You are watching a pandemic sweeping the world, which is on the scale of the bubonic plague of the Middle Ages. Now, that's biblical in its scope, biblical in its nature. And you and I aren't going to change it, and we're not going to stop it. It's going to occur. Nobody's going to tell these people how they're going to practice sex. Nobody's going to repress these people's sexual expression. They have decided. Well, in 1992, a researcher named Don Desrosier at Harvard injects 6 rhesus monkeys with a strain of simian immunodeficiency virus, SIV, and he engineers by removing one gene, he injects a control group of 12 monkeys with the same strain of the virus, but with the missing gene intact. Well, after 2 years, the 6 monkeys that had received the strain missing the gene are healthy and normal. CD4 counts and low levels of virus in their blood, while all the monkeys in the control group become sick or die. Now, Desrosier then injects 4 of the healthy monkeys and 4 from the control group with the intact virus. The monkeys that had received the genetically engineered virus remain healthy, even when Desrosier's repeats the experiment using a 100 times stronger dose of the intact virus. DeRozier's experiment seems to show a promising vaccine approach, but many researchers are wary of injecting a live virus into humans. DeRozier's results are later called into question when in 1994, Dr. Ruth Ruppert shows data from experiments in which she gave newborn monkeys a later version of DeRozier's vaccine and all developed AIDS from the vaccine. And then there was the third antiretroviral drug approved, known as DDC. It was approved by the FDA to be used in conjunction with AZT, manufactured by Hoffman LaRoche. DDC is approved 8 months after the company applies for a license. Then there's a change in the definition of AIDS back in 1992. Bill Clinton was elected president, remember, in 92. During his campaign, Clinton promised to provide new leadership on AIDS. By 1992, 200,000 Americans had died, and more than 1.5 million were already infected with HIV. Now, the HIV-positive individuals address conventions. In July, two HIV-positive individuals, Bob Hetoy, a gay advisor to the Clinton campaign, and Elizabeth Glazier, a heterosexual mother infected during a blood transfusion, addressed the 1992 Democratic National Convention. We're part of the American family, and Mr. President, your family has AIDS, Hetoy says to the crowd, and we're dying, and you're doing nothing about it. And I couldn't let that one pass. You know, most AIDS cases involve a violation of scriptural law. This one guy is a gay, he's a sodomite, and this lady is practicing eating blood by having a blood transfusion. Now, here in America, a blood transfusion is about as common as having a dental carry filled. I mean, nobody thinks anything about having a blood transfusion any more than you think about having your tooth filled. Excuse me. Holes in your teeth are the results of a broken law, dietary law. And if you're sick and you need a blood transfusion, shouldn't we go back and ask ourselves, well, why are we sick? Well, it's because I needed an operation. Why did you need an operation? Well, because I had a gallbladder problem. Why did you have a gallbladder problem? Boys and girls, it goes back to your diet. And primarily, fat, blood, salt, and sugar. Not that salt's bad for you, but this sodium chloride that you buy in the store, chemical salt, that's bad for you. Sugar. I'm going to do a series of programs here on diabetes. Diabetes is another killer. Diabetes is just like AIDS. It's a lifestyle disease. You get diabetes because you want it. You get AIDS because you want it. You won't have it any other way. I had a lady one time, her husband's name was Roy, and she wrote me a letter. She said, why did God let Roy die? I think he was 37 or 47, I don't know exactly, but he's a young man, you know, yet. And why did God let Roy die? And it's because Roy wouldn't have it any other way. I told you about the farmer that said to me, nobody's going to tell me what to eat, and 2 years later he's dead from a coronary. Boys and girls, nobody's going to tell you that you can't eat at McDonald's. And when I talk about diet, you know, the average guy in America today thinks that meat and potatoes is a balanced diet. And what better place can you get meat and potatoes than McDonald's? Kids, no. There's nothing in an American supermarket fit for human consumption. And maybe I'm wrong about that. Out of 10,000 things in a supermarket, my God, there's got to be one thing in there fit for human consumption. But I tell you, boys and girls, it's hidden so well, I've never been able to find it. Now, there's a lot of people out there that have a lot of weird ideas about diet, you know, like macrobiotics and vegetarianism and on it goes. And I don't deny that. And that's a part and parcel with a deception. What you do is you put so much information out there that nobody can fathom all of that information. But, you know, there's a natural whole diet spoken of here in the Bible, along with certain prohibitions, prohibitions against eating fat, blood, and certain animals, certain meat. I mean, if you start there, and then if you just eat, you know, meat and potatoes and vegetables, nothing wrong with meat. As long as it's clean meat. Nothing wrong with eating vegetables as long as the vegetables are grown in good soil. But you know, by the time you've genetically modified these vegetables and by the time you grow them in chemical soils and then you turn around and you spray them with deadly toxic poisons and then you put that on the shelf and then you take that home and eat it, kids, is it any wonder that you're getting cancer? And by the way, in 1900, the cancer rate in this country was at 1 out of 33, and today it's 1 out of 2, and it's headed for 1 out of 1. Everybody's going to have cancer in their lifetime in the United States of America by the year 2020. Well, that's what medicine is bringing you. Now, if you want the medical therapy, if you want medicine, you know, get after it. It's right there. That's what they're selling. That's what most people are buying. Now, I'm not one of those buyers, and I don't want anything to do with it. All right, so I'm just pointing out here that, yeah, these people are part of the American family. And when they get AIDS, it's a tragedy. I don't deny that. But you know, before you get AIDS is the time to be thinking about AIDS. Now, the following month, Mary Fisher, who was an HIV-positive mother from Florida, she spoke to the GOP convention. And she said, tonight I represent an AIDS community whose members have been reluctantly drafted from every segment of American society, she says. And though I am white and a mother, I'm one with a black infant struggling with tubes in a Philadelphia hospital. Though I'm female and contracted this disease in marriage and enjoy the warm support of my family, I'm one with the lonely gay man sheltering a flickering candle from the cold wind of his family's rejection. Well, boys and girls, let me answer that. You know, sin is the transgression of the law. And sin produces bitter fruit. And this lonely gay man made a choice, knowingly or unknowingly. And it was a bad choice. Now, this woman says that she's got a black infant struggling with tubes. I don't know, did you adopt this black child, and did he have AIDS? Did you marry a black man, and are you in an interracial marriage in violation of the marriage laws? I don't know, lady. You know, this is 1992. This is a report. Arthur Ashe announced that he had AIDS. Now, tennis player Arthur Ashe, this is back in 1992, learned in 1988 that he had contracted HIV. What did he do to get HIV? Was he in Flo's whorehouse? Was he out here having unprotected sex? Was he a sodomite? I don't know. It was believed he received tainted blood products during heart surgery in 1979. Why did Arthur Ashe have heart problems? Was it because he ate Jimmy Dean pure pork sausage? Plugged up his arteries with fat? You know, Leviticus 3:17 tells you don't eat fat, and then the American Cancer Society, the American Heart Association, they'll tell you don't eat fat, watch your cholesterol. When God wrote don't eat fat 3,000 years ago, nobody knew why. Today we know why. It plugs up your arteries. Causes plaque in your arteries. I don't hear doctors telling you stop eating fat. Do you? Maybe after you've had a heart attack, they might tell you to stop eating fat, but they sure as hell don't tell you to stop eating fat before you have the heart attack. And surgery is cutting and marking your body. That's a violation of the law. That's a crime. Blood transfusions are a crime. Heart disease is the result of a broken law called bad diet. Arthur Ashe had bad diet. He ate Jimmy Dean pure pork sausage, plugged up his arteries. Now he needed heart surgery. He goes to the hospital to get the heart surgery. Now he's going to practice witchcraft by having cuttings and markings made upon his body in violation of that statute. And he's going to have some blood transfusions, which is another crime, which is called eating blood, violation of Leviticus 3:17. Although he's not going to eat the blood, he's going to mainline it right up his arteries. And he's going to come down with AIDS, and then the AIDS is going to finally kill him at age 47. Again, you know, there are several statutes here in the scriptures that Arthur Ashe violated. And the ultimate end was, at age 47, he died. He wasn't gay. He wasn't violating the prohibition against sodomy. He was violating some other laws. Again, the wages of sin is death. Now, while you're breaking these laws, it's a lot of fun. But then when the chickens come home to roost, you know, then it's a different story, isn't it? Let me give you a mid-course reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service in the public, brought to you in the public interest. Remember, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week, and the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours. Just call us and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to necessarily endorse or recommend the Law Hour and editorial review. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we use on the program are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans. They don't agree with us, and we don't necessarily agree with everything that they say either. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Okay, we're talking about the age of AIDS, a report put out by PBS, Public Broadcasting Service or System, and it's specifically put out on the program Frontline from WGBH in Boston. And you can get these programs, these Frontline programs, are on DVD and audio, not audio, but videotape. And they usually cost about $35 postpaid, $35 or thereabouts. What I do is go to the webpage and find out what the price is. If you want to see the television version, play it in your DVD, that's an option. Or you can get the report. It's 48 pages. That's what we're covering this week. And, of course, I'm making my editorial comments as I progress through the report. It's a 48-page report, and it's free. PBS and Frontline puts out the information as a public service. It's a free public service. You got to pay them a little something if you want to be entertained with the videotape. The program was so gripping that when I saw the program, I said, my God, I got to make a report on this. And so that's what I'm doing. By 1993, the doubts began to surface about the GP120 vaccines. Now, you've heard about this vaccine. Now, here's a problem. This is what the report tells you. This AIDS thing has a number of mutant varieties. They're up to about GH or I. I forget exactly, but there's several mutant varieties. And the AIDS virus mutates. It changes every now and again, and then the vaccine that they create for it isn't of any value anymore. Not that they've developed a vaccine to start with, but you see that with this flu vaccine all the time. That's why the flu vaccine is such a joke. By the time you get the flu vaccine from last year's flu, next year's flu isn't going to be the same as last year's. So they sell it at $25 a shot, and it makes a lot of money, makes billions of dollars in revenue. And the people that get the flu vaccine run a higher risk of developing Alzheimer's disease. It's probably what causes Alzheimer's disease, probably. Because if you have received a flu shot, 5 times out of the last 10 years, you have double, triple, or quadrupled, I've forgotten exactly what it is, double, triple, or quadrupled your chances of developing Alzheimer's disease. You know, there it is. And I suspect that's probably not from the vaccine. It's probably from the thimerosal that's in the vaccine, probably. Nobody seems to know, but that's what a lot of people are blaming it on, thimerosal. Well, let's see here. We got a federal study conducted on needle exchange, and then they started saying, well, what we need to do is to develop needle exchange. Don't teach these people not to practice witchcraft. Don't teach these people to not use these drugs. And I'm not just talking about illegal drugs like heroin. I'm talking about all drugs. Drugs, whether you get it from Joe down on the street corner or you get it from Rexall, violate the scripture. It's witchcraft. Witchcraft is a capital felony punishable by death. And indeed, the people that are on drugs die. And if they don't die from the drugs, I've done a report or two on this line. Doctors, that is your doctor, along with the hospitals of America, kill 130,000 people a year that they admit to. The real number is double that, and it could be 4 times that. Could be. We think that it's more like 500,000, but they admit to 130,000 a year. And that's from the legal drugs. The illegal drugs are like a pimple on an elephant's trunk. The illegal drugs are bad. The illegal drugs like heroin and cocaine are terrible drugs, and you ought not to take them. But they only kill 6,000 people a year. The legal drugs that are terrible, wicked, and awful and evil, and you ought not to be taking them, and you ought to avoid them like AIDS, herpes, and VD, kill 130,000 people a year. You got those from your drug pusher, the medical doctor. So you got an illegal drug pusher down on the street corner, and then you got a legal drug pusher in the doctor's office. Both of those entities, the illegal drug pusher and the legal drug pusher, violate the law of God. So, you know, then somebody writes me a letter, and they say, my mother has been diagnosed with this form of cancer. I assume it's cancer. We've been looking for some type of natural remedy because we need help. Time is running out for her and for us. Those are kind of tearjerkers, and I've been reading several of these tearjerkers, but here again, boys and girls, before you get to this point, you need to take a look at my actions today and how is that going to impact upon me 5, 10, or 20 years down the road. Next week, I'm going to cover that with diabetes. I'm going to take another health issue next week. I hope it don't bore you to tears, but you know, my letters, you know, they're coming in here say you people are in deep drug disease trouble. I'm not. I'm an old man, but I'm not sick. Americans now, 99% of us, have some kind of a disease. We have some kind of a symptom. There's something wrong with us. 99%. Only 1% are symptom-free. I'm one of that 1%. And as I do programs, people write letters and they say, oh my God, I've got this. Hey, can you help? Can you do this or that? Jesus had the same problem. He was walking around through the countryside and he'd see somebody that was sick, he'd heal him. God can do things like that. I can't. I'm not God. I can't heal you. If I could, I probably would. I'd probably walk up, touch you and say, be healed, be healed. You know, I'd like to do that. Unfortunately, little Georgie Gordon doesn't have that power and I can't do that. Jesus did and he did and he went around. He healed people. He had the power to do it and he actually went around and healed them. And they were constantly following him because they wanted to get healed. They were sick and they wanted to get healed. Anybody that's sick wants to get healed. Okay, but what caused the sickness? And this is the point from the scripture. God told you that this is the way to take care of your body. Your body is like your new Ford automobile. It comes with an owner's manual. The Bible is the owner's manual. And it tells you how to maintain your body. It tells you what kind of fuel to put in it. And it tells you how to use it so that, you know, the thing doesn't fall apart on you. And fortunately, years ago, I picked up on that, and I've been following that owner's manual, and it seemed to work like a shot for me. You know, I can't tell you, I don't look quite to be 70 yet, but when I get to be 70, I'm going to say, well, it worked like a shot. Now, an automobile has about 100 or 200,000 miles of useful life in it, and if you service the car, you know, from time to time, it'll probably make 100,000. Now, if you tried to run this thing for 100 or 200,000 miles without changing the oil, I don't know what the outcome is going to be. I mean, if you try to run this thing 200,000 miles and you don't ever put in new spark plugs, I don't know how it's going to run. I change the spark plugs and I do the servicing on my body that it calls for and that's required, and it's worked like a shot so far. Vaccine for AIDS has been a dismal failure. Back in 1994, MTV cast members with AIDS, the AIDS educator and gay activist Pedro Zamora, is featured on The Real World, a popular reality series. The 22-year-old dies of AIDS on November the 11th, one day after the season finale. President Clinton released a statement saying Pedro was particularly instrumental in reaching out to his own generation, where AIDS is striking hard, through his work with MTV. He taught young people that the real world includes AIDS and that each of us has the responsibility to protect ourselves and our loved ones. I underlined that. Each of us has the responsibility to protect ourselves and our loved ones. I couldn't agree more. I think in the final analysis that it's an individual decision that you make for yourself. People that practice sodomy make a choice in life. No, that's life. That's the way it is. And people that practice religion, or people that practice science or whatever it is, they make choices in life. Sometimes the choices are good. Sometimes the choices aren't so good. So I'm not here to tell you how to make your choices in life. But I think, as this young fellow here said, you know, you have a responsibility to protect yourself. And I said, I think you ought to be thinking about, before you know you take up this gay lifestyle, or if you're in the gay lifestyle, maybe you ought to be thinking about, what do you think the outcome of this is going to be 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now? Do you think you can keep dodging the bullet, you know, like New Orleans? Those people down in New Orleans, I was down there, well, 20 years ago. And I was in this guy's front yard, and a ship went by. I was at that location where you're 20 feet below sea level, and there's this big dike out here. I'm standing in this guy's front yard, and down at the end of the block over here, there's a big levee. And there's this humongous ocean-going ship, you know, these 10, 15, 20,000-ton ocean-going freighters just slowly sailing by. And I looked at that like, is this for real? You know, am I suffering from diabetes? Am I about to have a blackout here? Is this the beginning of God knows what? And a guy looked at me and he said, no, that's real. That's a ship. That's the Mississippi River right there. The Mississippi River. And he went on to explain to me how Lake Pontchartrain was right over here behind the house, and here's the Mississippi River over here by the side of the house. And he said, and one of these days they're predicting that we'll have a hurricane, and when that hurricane comes, if it hits Lake Pontchartrain, it's going to come over the dikes, over the levees, and it's going to flood this 20 feet deep. I couldn't believe my earballs. I couldn't believe people would live in a place like that. Of course, I was from California, and this guy said, you know, you're from California, and you know, you got those earthquakes. We can't imagine living out there where there's earthquakes. And then I remember Tornado Alley, and I thought, oh, my God, those people live in Oklahoma where those tornadoes come through, and then there's hurricanes on the Gulf Coast. You know, we all live in hazardous locations for one reason or another, don't we? One guy lives next to a volcano. The next guy lives on an earthquake fault. The next guy lives in Tornado Alley. And down in New Orleans, they're living 20 feet below sea level. Well, anyway, New Orleans kept dodging the bullet. The hurricanes would come in. They never hit Lake Pontchartrain. Katrina hit Lake Pontchartrain, and you saw the results. Well, I often wonder what happened. I've heard from that guy for 20 years, but I often wonder, well, was that guy still living in that house 20 years later, and did he get flooded out? Well, I guarantee he got flooded out. But is he back down there now thinking about rebuilding his house 20 feet below sea level? I mean, he made a choice. I wouldn't live in New Orleans. The people who live in New Orleans made a choice to live in New Orleans. I don't think I've got some duty, obligation, or responsibility to donate money to those people to rebuild their houses 20 feet below sea level, waiting for the next hurricane, and then when it comes, I'll donate more money and help him rebuild his house 20 feet below sea level. You know, my common sense says, no, building your house below sea level doesn't make sense. You need to move out of there. But I'm not here to tell those people in New Orleans what they ought to do. You see, if you just leave the marketplace alone, when a flood comes and destroys your house and you rebuild it, and the flood comes and destroys your house and you rebuild it, and the flood comes and destroys your house and you rebuild it, if you've got the money to rebuild your house three times, and you want to live there. And there was a guy over in St. Charles who got flooded out in 93 in the Great Mississippi Flood, and they rebuilt their house. And they said, well, we can't imagine living any place other than St. Charles County, Missouri, and we're going to rebuild our house. Well, I don't blame the guy. I mean, hell, if he wants to live there, that's no skin off my back. I lived in a flood zone in Lolita, California, and it flooded every 15, 20 years and flooded us out, and we kept rebuilding. But that's because we were making money there. In other words, the flood would come and cause some damage, and then when we'd clean up the damage and keep going. People that live next to volcanoes have good soil there on those volcanoes, and they're willing to take the risk of the eruption of the volcano because that's where the good soil is. And that's why we lived in Lolita, California, and I assume that's why you people live in New Orleans, because that's where the money's at. I just don't think you ought to ask me to rebuild your house for you. Now, there's a group that comes into play here in the 1990s called ACT UP. And these guys start causing a lot of trouble. See, they want us. They want you and me, brother, to pay our taxes so that those tax dollars can be spent on AIDS research so that these people can continue to practice their sodomy lifestyle. You see, what they're saying is we want to practice sodomy, and we know we're probably going to get AIDS. And we want a cure for AIDS so that we don't have to change our behavior, and we want you to pay for that, which is the same as saying, well, I want to live 20 feet below sea level. And when the flood comes and floods me out, I want you to pay your tax dollars in and rebuild my house. And then when the next flood comes, I want to rebuild my house with these tax dollars. And I'm sitting there saying, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do it. So I'm one of those contrarians that says, well, if the rest of you people want to practice that from each according to his ability and to each according to his need crap from the Communist Manifesto, that's okay by me. I'm not here to tell you what your politics ought to be. I'm just telling you that I'm not going to participate in your politics. So I reject this ACT UP concept, and I reject this rebuilding the Gulf Coast, and I reject donating money to the people on the Gulf Coast to rebuild their houses. Not because I don't have empathy for people that live on the Gulf Coast and the fact that their houses were destroyed. I can imagine if my house burned to the ground, how sad I would be. But ladies and gentlemen, when my house burns to the ground, you do not have any duty, obligation, or responsibility to rebuild my house. And I don't believe for a moment that you should be taxed, that you should have to go out and work and sweat and pay taxes to rebuild my house because of a bad decision that I made. You see, I don't have fire insurance. And I don't have fire insurance because I don't practice strict because I do practice strict liability. I don't practice insurance or limited liability. That's my choice in life. I made that choice. Why should you have to pay for my bad decision? If my decision is a bad decision, then I ought to pay the price. If I build my house 20 feet below sea level and it gets flooded out, that's my choice. You shouldn't have to rebuild it. Now, there's a thing called charity. Now, if you want to help somebody, and the Amish people do this, there was a tornado came through our neck of the woods here not too long ago, and the Amish practiced this, and this tornado knocked this Amish guy's house down. The Amish people came over and salvaged everything out of the house that wasn't destroyed. They took his furniture and took everything out, and the neighbors washed the clothes and hung them out and ironed them. And they took his furniture, loaded it in buggies and wagons, and they took it over and put it in their barns, and they refinished the furniture, and they did all those things. They came back about a week later. I don't know how many of these Amish guys it takes, but it's about 50 or 75. These Amish guys, they built this guy's house in a day. And they rebuilt this guy's house, and then you saw the pictures in the 6 o'clock news. There are about 50 Amish guys with 50 buggies and wagons are all hauling this guy's furniture and clothes back and putting it back in his house. And that was a hell of a good gesture on the part of the Amish, and they take care of themselves, and God bless them. Notice the Amish don't come to us and say, well, because this tornado came through here, we think that you taxpayers ought to rebuild our houses and all this kind of crap. They just roll up their sleeves, go to work, and take care of one another. I'm not opposed to charity. And I don't mind helping people, and I do, and I'm not... You know, I donate money to people to help them from time to time. What I'm opposed to here, and I'm telling you, I don't have any duty to come in here and pay my tax dollars to find a cure to AIDS so that I can circumvent the penalty or the punishment of God so that you can continue on breaking the law. I don't have any such duty, and I'm not going to participate in that. Nelson Mandela, back in 1994, was elected president, and AIDS was doubling. The HIV infection rate was doubling every year, and Mandela barely mentions the words AIDS in public appearances. And his health minister, Dr. Suma here, puts together a musical with AIDS awareness themes, but the production is a high-profile disaster. South Africa is on its way to becoming home to the world's largest epidemic. They just ignored it. I don't know why. AIDS affects black people just like it does whites, and then this is a black president. He ignores AIDS, and 12% of the population of South Africa now has AIDS, and most of them are black, not white. Most of them. You know, here again, you know, I don't want to tell you people your politics, but it looks like to me that you were doing better under the white regime down there in South Africa than you were under the blacks. But then, hey, the same thing was true in Rhodesia. And then you blacks down there said, well, we got to have freedom. Okay, now you got freedom, and you've got poverty, and you've got starvation, and you've got AIDS. You know, in Iraq, you didn't like Saddam Hussein, but you had law and order, and you had stability, you know. And so now today, you've got criminal behavior, you got a war, you don't have stability, but you don't have Saddam Hussein. I don't know. There's an old adage, you know, here in the States that says, you know, you people couldn't be satisfied. You'd complain if we hung you with a new rope. It's the way life is. And we Americans, not just Americans, but we Anglo-Saxons, have never been happy with our government. We were not happy with the government that we had under the Egyptians. We were not happy with the government that we had under Moses. We were not happy with the government we had under the judges. We were not happy with the government we had under the kings. We are not happy today with the government that we have called democracy. We have never been happy with government. But you know, our God has not forced these governments upon us. We desired all of these governments. And when God did come in and say, hey, listen, let me save you from the Egyptians. Now here's the government that you want. We said, kiss off. We're not going to practice this law. In 1 Samuel chapter 8, he says, okay, I'll butt out, but you're not going to like this. I'll butt out, but it's not going to be good for you. Now just apply that same principle here to AIDS. We're not happy with the health laws that God gave us, and so we've got our own health laws, we've got our own legislatures, we've got our own medical methodology. Well, how do you like it? How's it working for you? You know, in 1900, you had one person in 33 coming down with cancer. Now you got one person out of every two coming down with cancer. How do you like your medical profession? How do you like the medical regime? How do you like your government and your pharmaceutical industry? You didn't like Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy 14. You didn't like the 18 health laws that God gave you. You didn't like quarantine. Although the communists practice quarantine down in Cuba, and it works like a shot. It works like a shot. They got the lowest incidence of AIDS in the world in Cuba. We don't have the highest incidence of AIDS, but we've got a high incidence of it, and it's just as incurable in the United States as it is in South Africa. How do you like it? I'm just kind of rubbing it in a little bit because, hey, listen, kids, you're never going to be satisfied 100% with any regime. You're never going to be 100% satisfied with the Republicans or the Democrats or with God or with Catholicism or Protestantism. But there is a regime that works, and it's better than what has replaced it. The government in South Africa that you had was better than the one you got now. The government you had in Iraq was better than the one you got now. But you still have high hopes. Well, keep after it, you know, keep after it. It's just like AIDS. You know, keep after it, you know, maybe you'll like it better next year or the year after. But AIDS is pandemic, and it's going to kill as many or more in a very short order than the bubonic plague. Well, I'm about out of time again. I'm going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement only. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. For more information, go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, that's the final gong. I'm going to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.